In Ankeny.
For 75 years, NCMIC has been doing the right thing for its customers, employees, and the community. Now, here's Miller and Condon.
Welcome back, Miller and Condon, 1460 KXNO, 106.3 FM, here until noon, coming up in about 30 minutes or thereabouts. Scott Dockerman from The Athletic, Mr. Monday Night, will make an appearance, Baltimore 7 at Circa as we speak. We shall see if he keeps that one-in-a-row winning streak.
One-in-a-row?
Is that what it is? I just
don't you
got
to have at least two?
To make it a streak?
Yeah.
I will see. I think you're on the Ravens side tonight. We'll find out at about just before we get out of here. Let's get to Bama Bob as we recap the weekend in college football, and what a weekend that it was. Hello, Bama, Trent, and Ken. How are you?
Just trying to recoup after that, Ken. I mean, what a weekend. I mean, where do we start?
Well, the time slots couldn't have worked out better, Bama, from where we sit, here in Iowa, with the Red River Showdown. At the same time, you got the Ole Miss in Arkansas, then you get Iowa, Penn State in the middle of the afternoon, and the game in Lincoln, and the game at in Texas A&M and Alabama. Just an amazing, amazing weekend. Before we get into that, and we'll go through all the conferences. Maybe not the ACC.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if there was anything in there. Maybe there was.
There was a good one in that one.
Oh, you know what there was? Notre Dame and Vautech, right? But before we do that, Cincinnati won 52-3, coming off an emotional win over Notre Dame. If there was ever going to be a letdown, look, Temple was never going to beat them. The number was 30. They clobbered them, Bama, and it was third stringers in there at the end of the football game. Is Cincinnati for real?
I believe they are for real, Ken, and when we get to the last segment, I'll tell you how for real I think they are.
When we do our playoffs teams. Gotcha. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was impressed.
Yeah, I mean, me too. Classic letdown game.
Yes.
Coming off an emotional win and just nothing. Just absolutely ran over them. Again, not much opposition, but if you're a playoff team or you're a team trying to get to the playoff, especially an FBS team, and really, are they an FBS team? Because they're going to the Big 12. I mean, that's kind of a gray area right now for me. But that's what you need to do to a team like that, and they did it.
You know, if they don't get in this year, then if there was ever going to be a year, college football needs to proact instead of react. If you're not going to put them in, take Coastal, take Cincy, take
BYU.
Yeah. Who are we missing?
It's the MAC champion.
Sure.
Whoever wins the Mountain West.
Boise State had a big win over BYU. But find four teams, do it on different days.
Have their own playoff. Yeah, if you're not going to give them a shot.
Right. They deserve to have their day in the sun.
That was all summer long. If there was ever a time, that's what I said with Cincinnati. They had the success the year previous, so they're going to start ranked high. Mm-hmm. They had two games against, at the time, top 25 preseason teams in Indiana and Notre Dame. It was all there. And if they do that, and an American that isn't as good as it's been some years, but SMU's pretty good.
Yeah.
Houston has played well after that week one loss. And, of course, you got UCF, who is not very good this year. But would you be surprised if Gus's boys are ready to go next week against Cincinnati? I certainly won't be. Mm-hmm. You get through that at 13-0, and you still don't get a spot at the table.
Yeah.
It's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen.
Well, and that UCF game is an ABC game early. So, that's another network game. A chance for them to make an impression on network TV.
I'm looking at it right here.
Now, Ron's name carries a little juice. I think that's a team maybe in transition a little bit. They're certainly not what they were a few years back, but it's a recognizable name. It's a recognizable opponent, and it's probably the last one they're going to have because you look at the rest of it, and it's Navy, Tulane, Tulsa, South Florida, SMU, and East Carolina. So, this is probably their last chance to really make an impression on the national stage, and they've got an ABC game. So, what more could you want?
Yeah, indeed. Before we get into breaking some of the things down, Bama, Ed Orgeron, it sure seems like it's over. I mean, Kentucky kicked the crap out of him. Seemed like that was almost a must-win game for LSU. It's a big job. Let's not kid ourselves to thinking anything otherwise. Would they do it in the middle of the season, Bama, or would they do it maybe late in the season to get a jump on whoever, quote, their guy is? How's this going to end? Because they're not going to win this week. I think Florida's going to kick their you-know-what.
Yeah. I think there's two games, Ken. I think if they are – well, I guess really, their next three, they got Florida at Ole Miss at Alabama. Mm. Okay? I don't think – I will be surprised if Orgeron is coaching against Alabama on November 6th. They have a bye week before, so if you're going to do it, maybe you do it then. But yeah. Look, I mean, it's just one of those things where there's nobody on that staff. I mean, somebody will take the position, but nobody's going to be a candidate full-time. And I think this is probably it for Orgeron. There's a reason he didn't get the USC job. I think we're starting to see that now. This was his dream. I kind of feel bad for the guy. You can tell how much he loves the school, how much he loves the state, how much it means to him to be head coach of LSU, but it is now obvious. It's not becoming obvious anymore. It is now obvious that 2019 was an outlier with Burrow and Chase and that great defense.
And Joe Brady.
Dave Canada, and I mean, yeah, all those. I mean, just a great staff, great team. And he just hasn't. We were willing to just kind of throw away last year along with a lot of teams. It's just, you know, it was such an odd year with COVID and everything else. But I think now we're seeing that maybe it wasn't just that. And look, when Kentucky, and no offense to your guilty pleasure, Ken, but when they run the ball for 330 yards against you, you've got issues that you can't correct. You can't correct it with scheme. You can't correct it with, you know, talent, because you don't have talent. I don't know what it is, but I mean, I think that's really the biggest thing. They just don't have the talent. They don't have the horses anymore. And I will be surprised again if he is coaching against Alabama, because they do have a tough one this week with Florida. And then at Ole Miss, you weren't talking about an ugly game. That game's got ugly all over it for LSU. So it really is going to end fast for him, and I wouldn't have seen that. There were a lot of questions after 19, but I think they've all been answered.
Let's go to the Big 12. Trent, I know you had the TV set up at the tailgate. Mm-hmm. You saw a lot of the Red River Showdown. What a game. I mean, what a game. 28-7 after the first quarter for Texas. 14-0 for Texas 2 minutes into the football game. Switch quarterbacks, and away they went.
So with that switch, what does that mean for Spencer Rattler? We talked about earlier, comes in for the two-point conversion, which was so weird. Does he transfer in season?
I don't think he's put enough tape together to get an NFL. Look, he was the number one. He was the first quarterback off the board, so somebody liked him.
Yeah.
Really good question. I don't think he plays again unless Williams gets hurt.
Sure. So you stick around if you're Rattler.
I think you do. I think you do it.
Wait
at the
end of the
year,
season.
You go to the NFL.
And be a fifth-round draft pick? Or do you go to SE School X and take over for a year?
Well, and try and rebuild your stock?
Like Jalen Hurts did.
Mm-hmm.
Lost his job to Tua,
mm-hmm.
goes to Oklahoma, and becomes an NFL player.
Mm-hmm. And a second-round pick?
Right. I think that's probably a better recourse than, all right, well, here's a little tape. I was benched 2 years in a row against Texas.
It's true.
You want to use a first couple-round draft pick on me? Probably not. I think that's the best route to go.
Mm. Bama, your thoughts on the Red River Showdown?
What a great game. I mean, just... as a neutral, you're just looking at this going, I mean, it was just, you couldn't take your eyes off of it hardly.
Nope.
And look, I think lost in all this, and the Rattler decision is certainly going to dominate the conversation. How good was Casey Thompson?
Yes.
388 yards.
And how tough is Casey Thompson?
Yeah.
I mean, just, you want to talk about a guy whose stock is on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this kid just, I mean, deep ball after deep ball after deep ball. You know, we all went in thinking that, Bijan Robinson, and he was really good too. Don't get me wrong.
No,
but
you're right.
I mean, Thompson, I think Thompson just really, from a Texas perspective, just elevated his status. As far as Rattler, listen, I can't imagine their NFL scouts looking at this going, yeah, we're going, like Trent said, we're going to spend a high draft pick on him. You just can't do it. It's one thing if you're a Trey Lance and you don't have a lot of tape, but you have all the measurables. You've got tape on this kid now, and it's not good what you've seen. Lincoln Riley's got a problem because I listened to his comments after the game, and he was trying. You could tell he was trying to keep Rattler in the conversation, talking about, well, he came in and, you know, he converted the most important play of the game, which was the 2-point conversion. I would argue that was the most important play of the game because I think the last one was the most important play of the game. But Caleb Williams, just there's no way he can't start.
Nope.
Now, look, they've got TCU this week, and then they've got Kansas. Now, that Kansas game might be one of those where if you're going to make a switch, Rattler can get a lot. Maybe he can get some confidence back against Kansas because, let's face it, they're terrible. And that's just one of those games where it's going to be interesting because that's a home game. That's their next home game, I think, for Oklahoma. If I'm looking at it right. No, that's at Kansas. They have TCU this week. So that's a game to me where maybe if you want to try to rehab him, you can do something there. But I don't think he'll be, unless, like you said, unless Williams gets hurt, I think he's done at Oklahoma. He would be smart to go to a place, you know, where he can get a shot, you know, and I'm just tossing out, you know, a place like UCF or Auburn or somewhere like that, where I think they're tired of Bo Nix at Auburn. It's been proven that's not going to work. I don't know who the next. They don't really have a guy in waiting. But yeah, I think he is done at Oklahoma, in my opinion, in terms of being relevant, unless Williams gets hurt, because he is clearly the future. And off of that game, how about that catch by Mims by the pylon?
Unbelievable!
Oh my God! And what an angle. I mean,
I loved it.
I was waiting there. Okay, if the shoelace is out, is he out? Or does it have to be part of his actual
foot? That close.
I mean, just what an incredible, great game. But I'm going to be really interested to see what Rattler does and then how Riley handles it. Because he's trying to keep him involved. But I think from a fan perspective, everything else, Caleb Williams is unquestionably your guy going forward.
Just one more note on the Big 12 before we switch gears to the Big 10. Baylor looks legit. Aranda's done a really nice job with that team. He's done a great job. The Bohannon's a good quarterback. He's legit.
And TCU just manhandling Tech.
Clobbered him.
Physically up front. I think Duggan just had like 100 and some yards passing, like 104 or something like that.
I saw him running the ball.
We're running the football right at you. Try to stop it, and Tech couldn't.
Trent, let's go to the Big 10. Of course, we talked a ton about Penn State and Iowa. Mm-hmm. Michigan finding a way to win, or no, Nebraska finding a way to lose.
Martinez finding a way to fumble again.
It's unbelievable, Bam. He can't get out of his own way.
I feel bad for him.
I do,
oh,
too.
Oh, my God, you feel terrible.
Trent?
You want to like him, and you do like
him. I do like him. He's their whole offense.
He keeps giving away games. I mean, sorry. Go ahead, Trent.
Kenneth Walker.
Oh.
He should be the Heisman front runner.
Or certainly one of those invitations. Yes.
He should be number one.
Mm-hmm.
There is nobody that has been more important to his team than what Walker is. That was a tricky spot against Rutgers. That was kind of that look ahead, sleepy early kickoff.
He was north of 200. Where did he finish up?
Finished with, what was it? Just had it up here a moment ago.
232.
Jesus.
He should be at the top of the list. Michigan State. That's the story of college football. Mel Tucker, whose team looked awful at times in year one, what he's done and has them now in a spot to have an opportunity to get back to Indianapolis. That is big time. Number one on my Heisman list, Kenneth Walker.
You know, that's a fair point. Glad you brought that up. Thorne, I like the quarterback a lot. Walker, wow. Bama, your thoughts on the Big Ten?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of places you can go, a lot of great games. Real quick, Iowa, big win for them. Happy for the program. Let's not really kid ourselves. I don't know if I'm sure you guys have talked about this. They caught a break when Clifford went out. I mean, that
they made a break. They made a break.
They did. I'll give you that. They made a break. But when he went out, Penn State had no chance. That kid was just so overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what did he finish? I don't even have the stats in front of me, but it was pathetic. The defense is legit. There's no question about it. And they made some plays against, Penn State still had their first team defense out there at full strength. So you got to give them a lot of credit for making plays when they needed to. I don't know if they win. maybe they do, maybe they don't, if Clifford doesn't get hurt. But all that doesn't matter. Like you said, they made the break. This wasn't anything that that was self-inflicted by Penn State. So you give Iowa a ton of credit. Tough loss for Penn State, and they got a really tough schedule ahead of them. Ohio State's coming, I think. They're starting to get some things corrected. I know it's been a couple of, you know, Rutgers and Maryland or whoever, but they got a bye week. Then they go to Indiana, and then that's, it gets real for them because they got Penn State at Nebraska, which we've seen what that defense can do if they can hang in and they're not deflated. And then they end with Michigan State and Michigan. So that's a tough one, too. I'm glad you mentioned Michigan State. Walker, you're right. He's got to, he has to be leading the Heisman. I don't know who else it is right now because Bryce Young has stubbed his toe. Rattler's fallen off the board. They're, you know, who else is it right now? And the thing to me that's so different with Michigan State this year, it's not only the running game. You kind of, you know, they've had guys in the past that could really just pound the ball, Le'Veon Bell, and go back to Lorenzo White. I mean, when they've been really good, they've been able to do this. But Naylor out on the edge, I mean, he, what is it, 3 touchdowns over 60 yards in that game? I mean, he is a guy that can just bust it open. And I think you have to respect that. And then that opens the game for Walker. So, listen, Mel Tucker, they got it right. I mean, he, like you said, rough year one, and off we go. And, you know, the meat of their schedule is ahead of them, too, with Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. You know, 4 out of 3 out of the last 5. But for right now, I mean, they're going to be a threat. Michigan, again, they find a way to do it. Or, as you said, maybe Nebraska found a way to give it to them. I don't know. But, you know, 6-0 is 6-0, and that's all you can be at this point. You played 6, and all you can do is win 6. I still think the day of reckoning is coming for them. I'm not 100% sold on that team, but we'll see. They'll get their chance because with 2 weeks. I think that Michigan State game on October 30th in East Lansing, I hope that's an ABC game. They got a bye week this week, and then they could play Northwestern, and I'm really hoping that that game in East Lansing can be a primetime ABC because I just, it'll probably be a Fox, you know, big noon. But that's got a chance to be a really good football game as we get into November.
No doubt about it. Pac-12 from over the weekend. Herm Edwards, they got it done again. Give them credit. That was a good win for Arizona State. What else? Oregon State falling on their face a little bit. I mean, it's the Pac-12. I can't get too excited about it. I know we should, but I just
USC's mailed it in.
Yeah, that's totally over, right? Totally over for USC. Yeah. What are they now? Are they still 500 or no?
3-3.
Yeah, not much to talk about.
You know, Slovis throws for 400 and they lose by 16 to a Utah team that was, you know, 2-2 coming in. So
is Utah getting better?
I don't know where they're going. That next tire has got it. They have to hit on the next hire out there. And it's not going to be Urban Meyer, I don't think.
No.
And I just don't know who it's going to be. But, you know, they got to hit it or they're going to just be floundering, I think, you know, for who knows how long.
Anything in the Pac-12, Trent?
No, just another caller telling Bama you got to relax. Iowa made some plays there. Bama, you're firing people up here. Got to give credit to those Hawkeyes a little bit more. We're
no,
hearing
I
plenty
do.
Of them.
I do. I give them a ton
I'm getting
of
text messages. I mean, I'm getting phone calls here on the show.
Perfect. I mean, their defense is legit. There's no question about it. Their offense is – I give them credit because they made plays against a really good Penn State defense. But there is no doubt that when Clifford went out of the game, it was – I mean, what did Penn State have, 50 yards of offense after that? I don't know. I mean, they were so easy to defend afterwards, and you just waited around and waited to make your opportunity, and they did.
Yeah, there was no threat of throwing the football. There was no threat of
Robinson's right, exactly. I'm not saying that Iowa doesn't win if Clifford doesn't get out, but I mean it was a different team when he went out of the game, and Iowa took advantage of it. And to your, as you said, and rightly so, Trent, Iowa made the break. They knocked him out of the football game, and you make your own luck sometimes, and Iowa did.
And they picked Clifford off twice before he was injured.
They did.
You saw Parker making adjustments. They started blitzing a lot more. Clifford was out of sorts after that. To think that it was just going to continue like you saw the first couple of drives. After their scripted plays went away, Penn State's offense went away too, even with Clifford in there before the injury.
And Ferentz and his staff are great at in-game adjustments. They are one of the best in the country and have been for a long time, in my opinion. at making in-game adjustments, which is something that you don't see from a lot of coaching.
Well, you pass that along down south, all right? That's what we need from you, Bama. Make sure Feinbaum gets that too, okay?
Oh, no, he'll be all over the Hawks today. He'll be a big fan.
About Feinbaum?
Trent, SEC?
SEC, you mentioned the Arkansas-Ole Miss. It was just so entertaining. It was just the fun factor of it.
Those that Ole Miss.
Right. Yeah, laying the points wasn't a good one there. But it just, the fun factor, we need that. Those college games that, yeah, the disappointment of what happened for both of those programs the week before, but to bounce back in that kind of fashion, it's just incredible. More of those games. I need more 52-51s in my life.
Bama, any blowback from Pittman going for two?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it was just one of those where, you know, look, were you really going to stop?
No, they weren't.
Overtime?
No.
I mean, I don't. The play calling, maybe, you know, where you throw it instead of when you just have these, you know, this monster offensive line, you know, why not? I don't know. Maybe that a little bit, but I don't think there's any blowback from Arkansas fans on that. I mean, I do not think they were going to win that game in overtime because they were just going to have to match Ole Miss score for score. And at some point you would think Ole Miss, you know, would win that. Even if you were, whatever the rule is now, is it second overtime, third overtime?
Yeah, you got to go for two. Yeah.
You were going to have to do it anyway. Why not do it at the end of the game to try to kill it?
No, I'm with you.
I don't think there's any blowback on Pittman for this.
And Milik Corral threw a long touchdown pass. I think there was a 122 left in the football game. I knew it was coming. Arkansas is going to go down the field, and they're at minimum going to tie it up. All right, so
Seth Small, that field goal to win the game for A&M.
Oh, did you see his mom?
That started. Look, that thing was hooked to.
He missed.
He hooked the and then it knuckles back and slices on him after starting with the hook. I mean that. You can't do that.
No.
And he did that.
Did you see the video of his mom and his family? They just kept the camera on them. Mm-hmm. Oh, it brought a tear in my eye.
Yeah.
I mean, just, she dropped to her knees. So here's, you got to see it. She drops to her knees, right? Dad hardly moves. He's stoic. Mom and his ever, both drop to her knees. She looks up and she leaps the railing and onto the field she goes.
That's excellent.
Oh, it was awesome. You got to find it on Twitter. Anyways, yeah, that was an unbelievable. So, Bama, what does... this was going to be the game, right? You talked about this in August, that this was going to be the spot that you thought was going to be the most difficult.
Yeah.
Here's my perspective on it, and maybe this isn't given enough credit to A&M. I know it's going to sound like that. Alabama made a mistake. They self-imploded. Give A&M credit. They took advantage every single time. But Alabama, everything that possibly could go wrong did go wrong in that 60 minutes.
Well, yeah, it was as sloppy of a game as you will see under Nick Saban. And, I mean, in all phases. And there's one guy getting roasted down here today, and I'll get to him in a minute. But, look. Drop passes in the end zone, drop passes that could have extended the drive.
Receivers running into each other.
Yeah, receivers running into each other. You know, it really kind of started when Malachi Moore got thrown out for targeting on the third defensive play of the game. That was a play where, you know, he could have easily pulled up and out of the hit, but for whatever reason, he wanted to tag the kid, and he made helmet-to-helmet contact. And we can all argue that it wasn't egregious, you know, and we need to have, you know, move forward where, you know, a kid doesn't get tossed for that. Fine, throw the 15 yards if you want to. But we all know the rules. The players know the rules. The coaches know the rules. If you do that, you're going to get tossed. He did. He deserved it. And that really put them under the eight ball because one of the number 14 came in for him, and if you watch a few of those touchdowns, you'll see the back of number 14 chasing an A&M receiver. So it kind of started there, and just the fact they couldn't protect Bryce Young in the first half. I mean, he was just under siege. Mm-hmm. And Doug Marrone is the offensive line coach, and he's an NFL guy. He's supposed to be one of these gurus. And again, we just talked about Ferentz. How you couldn't adjust that on the sidelines, you had to wait till halftime. They did clean a lot of it up in the second half. Okay, Bill O'Brien is getting hammered down here for calling a pass play that Bryce Young threw an interception. It was a great play by the A&M defender. Third and goal at the one. You got Brian Robinson in the backfield, and you don't hand it to him.
I know, it's crazy.
First and goal at the three.
Yep.
You throw three times in the fourth quarter, and you kick a field goal. That's 11 points.
Yep.
And then, of course, they couldn't stop A&M when they needed to. And I'll tell you, the quarterback Calzada, Ken, you'll remember this game. That game reminded me of Steven Garcia in 2010. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That kid played an almost perfect game.
South Carolina.
How about him getting knocked out on that last play, going into the tent, Jimbo Fisher going into the tent.
Following him in.
Following him to the tent. You know, hey, rub some dirt on it, kid. I need you. Because they had nothing behind him. And then out he comes again and they couldn't get a stop when they needed to. But listen, this was a thoroughly deserved loss for Alabama, and they're either going to react to it and, you know, straighten some things out and correct it, which I tend to think they will. That's kind of the history. Or they're just going to be, 8-3 team or 9-3 or 10-2 or, off to the whatever, and they just get wrecked by Georgia. So in the grand scheme, it doesn't hurt them, I don't think, because if they win out, which they should, although Tennessee is starting to get a little spunky up there, and they still have get that game out in Tuscaloosa. If they win out, they're going to face Georgia in the SEC championship game, and if they win that, they're going to get in anyway. Mm-hmm. Now, right now, I don't think they can beat Georgia. Kentucky, I think we'll find that out this week, unfortunately. But it was a thoroughly deserved loss. And I think one of the real turning points was right after Alabama blocked the punt, they gave up the kickoff.
Yeah, killed them.
That you just never see that under Nick Saban. So it was sloppy all around, players, coaches, everything. They deserved it. They're not a playoff team right now if it started.
Well, let's do that since we're out of time and we've got to get to Scott Dockerman. Trent, your top four, top four playoff teams right now in order.
Georgia.
Yep.
Iowa.
Yep.
Oklahoma.
Yep.
Cincinnati.
Okay, good list. Yep. Bama?
Georgia.
Yeah.
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati, too.
Iowa. Oklahoma with a big push by Ohio State coming up. Yes, and I know Michigan's undefeated, but they'll have a chance. But Ohio State, I'm telling you, I think they're on the come. So, and again, maybe kick off some listeners. I just think Cincinnati is that good.
I do, too. I think they're really good. I'll go Georgia, Iowa, Cincy, Oklahoma for my top four. Bama, we'll talk to you on Friday. We'll have a good list of games to preview. Have a wonderful week, Bama Bob. Thanks for doing this.
Always enjoy it, Ken. Take care.
Yeah, good to talk to you. Bama Bob, Trent, and I going around college football. Scott Dockerman from The Athletic next, 1460 KXNO 106.
Onward. Joined by Dr. Ethan Heisman from Elite Eye Care, University Avenue in West Des Moines. I suffer from dry eyes. It's not just eye drops. There's other treatments that are out there.
We have one of the newest treatments available in our office. It's called Intense Pulsed Light, or IPL. It targets the abnormal blood vessels that are the root cause of the inflammation causing dry eye. The side benefit is you don't see those blood vessels anymore.
That's Elite Eye Care, 9250 University Avenue in West Des Moines, and a new location, the Eye Company.
High school sports fans, having trouble finding apparel that properly highlights your fandom and school spirit? Then you should check out the Norwalk Shop, located in Norwalk, Iowa. We've been in business for over 5 years, supporting high schools and small businesses across the state of Iowa with affordable custom apparel. Have a small job that requires embroidery? We can do that too, and cheaper than anyone in the area with just a $12 setup fee. Check us out on Facebook or stop into 810 Main Street, Norwalk, and let us know how we can help you out. The Norwalk Shop.
Trent Condon here to tell you about Rentestate, the new revenue rocket ship. Putting your home up for rent, not for sale. But why would you do that in a seller's market? Just do the math. Selling a home will catch you some cash once, while renting a home keeps that cash coming month after month after month. And because there are always renters, but not always buyers, Rentestate is foolproof, recession-proof, and retirement plan positive. What's not to love? The hassles of being a landlord? For one monthly flat rate, Renter's Warehouse will take away the tedious tasks. Tend to your tenants, answer the 3 a.m. calls, market your property, and collect the rent. Make the savvy, long game, paradigm shift, and choose Rentestate with Renter's Warehouse. Get your free rental price analysis today. Go to renterswarehouse.com or call 515-528-4429. 515-528-4429. Because you can't buy happy local sports.
I'm Lauren Condon. Welcome back. 1460 KXNO 106.3 FM. Scott Dockerman, 30 seconds. Will McIlvaine leaving you and I. He's in the transfer portal. And the White Sox and the Astros down the drain to rain. They will play It's game four tomorrow at 1:07. Let's get Scott Dockerman in here from The Athletic. Doc, Trent, and Ken, thanks for coming on. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
Doing really well, Doc. Where I want to start with you on this Iowa victory over Penn State is against special teams. I know we can go a lot of different directions, but man, Shudak just week after week after week, he has been so good. And what can you say about Torrey Taylor that hasn't been said? Just what he did, punting, pinning the Nittany Lions the way he did, and then Shudak with that 48-yard field goal into the swirling breeze at Kinnick Stadium. Man, oh man, those are two weapons, and they played a significant role again.
Yeah, they certainly have, and I think that's what when you're playing teams that are this good, and you've got to win games in the margin. Special teams sometimes tips the outcome in one or the other team's favor, and I think we looked back 10 years ago, and it was the other way around. I mean, Iowa kept getting beat on fake punts and onside kicks, and now that they are the team that has posed the most challenges and done the best work on special teams. And as you mentioned with Caleb Shudak, that was a question coming into the year. I mean, everybody had a lot of faith in him that he can make these field goals, but until you actually go do it, you don't know that he can, and he did. And, you know, you went by a field goal the other day, and you need three of them to win a top five matchup. He was out there doing it, and Torrey Taylor was just quite the weapon. And there he is again, you know, just consistently kicking the ball inside the 10-yard line, and that's what really helped Iowa win this game and put it in a really good position. I mean, ranked number two in the country for the first time, and you know, since 1985 to be that high.
Absolutely stunning. What they've been able to do here is. The quarterback gets it done again. Let's go there. I know you got an article up on Petras at The Athletic and the growth that we saw, the terrible start, 1-for-9, and what it turned into, including a pass that will be in lore for Hawkeye fans for a very long time, the touchdown to Reganey. Take us through the quarterback after that 1-for-9 start, how he was able to bounce back, and the confidence maybe the team has in him in bouncing back.
Yeah, he's something special in some ways, and I didn't think I'd ever say that about Spencer Petras, but to start 1-for-9 against that defense, against that secondary, which doesn't just have very good players. I mean, they have NFL-caliber players in the secondary and the back end, which is why they play so aggressively up front, and getting blitzed as often as he does, I think that was something that it really showed a lot of growth for him, a lot of toughness, and you need that because, you know, he threw a sloppy pass that was intercepted. It was his receiver touched it, but I wouldn't really classify it as a drop.
Sure.
And at that point in the game, you're like, oh boy, here we go. This could slide out of control. And he's coming back and playing with toughness. And I wrote today that he's got a lot of commonalities with Ricky Stanzi. And people have kind of forgotten in some ways all the struggles that Ricky had. And, you know, like the Michigan State game, people remember, of course, throwing the final pass to Marvin McNutt for the touchdown, but they don't remember that he was 7 of 18 before that final drive. And I think in some ways that's what Spencer Petras symbolizes is that even though he may struggle early, he's going to hit those big passes in key moments. And you go back through the course of the year, he's done it. Second quarter at Iowa State, throughout the game against Maryland. I mean, you know, even against, you know, Colorado State, he had some, and then of course the other day to Reganey, I think that one will have a life of its own before we know it.
Yeah, no doubt about that one. Scott Dockerman from The Athletic. Doc, you've been at Kinnick Stadium a whole lot over your career covering this team. What did I mean, obviously they were a huge factor, the fans at Kinnick Stadium, but how important was their role in this three-point win over Penn State?
It was critical. I mean, when you look at when Sean Clifford went out, and then you look at having a new quarterback go in who doesn't have a very loud voice that carries in an environment where it's that loud, and they have 8 false starts, you know, perhaps you could say the defensive line caused one of them or something. I would say that the crowd noise caused 7 of them. It was just so almost deafening at times that, you know, Iowa tipped the balance of that game by simply being able to have a crowd so loud that the other team couldn't get its signal straight or lock in. And so that was, I would say, the last 3 points were all because of the Hawkeye fan base.
It was a difference. And Doc, you've been to a lot of these games. How difficult is it to tell from the press box the sound of the crowd? The difference between, I went back to 2003, that Michigan game was one of the loudest that I had been to. Is it difficult in the press box to kind of get a read on this was louder than this moment, those kind of things?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard to remember specific.
Yeah, that too.
You know, was this 108 decibels or was this 110?
Right.
Something like that. I've seen some really loud moments in multiple sports, and certainly that was at or near the top of the list. I would say actually a wrestling meet a few years ago between Iowa and Penn State when Michael Kemmerer beat Hall, I think it was.
Yep.
I had a late takedown. That was the Carver Hawkeye was loud, and I think this one was right there, and there were more people, of course, and bigger area. But towards the end of the game, it was hard to even scream at the person next to you when I was out on the field.
Indeed. Doc, we know Campbell and Benson and that secondary, they get and rightly so get a lot of love seemingly after every game so far this year. You know who's in my mind is really coming on is Logan Lee. He's playing. His arrow's clearly pointing up, and he's becoming more and more of a factor on a very good defense.
He's finally healthy, and I think that's really important. I mean, he's got gigantic hands. I can't even describe how big his hands are. But he's just, for a guy that came in, he was thinking he was going to be a tight end, and then he ends up a defensive tackle, and he's really commanding a lot of the line of scrimmage, and it's a two-gap system, so he's got to really control the running game, and he's done a really nice job there. But he's also, been able to get some pass rush from the interior, and he's only a redshirt sophomore. And I think he's been a really impressive player to me. He's taken a step forward. And you know, the line in itself, the defensive line, doesn't have any superstars yet. I think they will be in a year or two. But it's just interesting because they have so many players who – could do so many things so well and do it kind of in an under-the-radar fashion. I mean, they were able to get enough pressure and stop the run well enough the other day that it kind of allowed the back seven to really take the credit for what ended up happening.
The offensive tackle spot remains an issue for Iowa. Both those young guys have just not played at a high level. Their development, well, Penn State had something to do with it this week. And you look at the rest of the schedule, there's a chance to grow. But with it, Doc, I know we have this conversation a lot, but because of those two guys, they're both young, they're inexperienced. Is this a time where you tinker with a little bit more, go away from the zone, not full time? Of course, that's always going to be a part of it, but get into some more gap blocking here just to help those young tackles out a little bit, or it's Iowa, they're just going to do what they do.
Oh, I think in some ways, I mean, the pass rushing last week was different because it was better. You went against a better team. I liked what they did against Maryland, and they had some really good edge rushers. I think they're going to have to stick with them because not that you know, if gap was working way better than zone, they'd go with the gap all exclusively. They're just not being able to get enough push, or there have been a lot of inconsistencies in a lot of different spots, except center. And that's probably been, if there's a disappointment this year, it's probably been the offensive line's inability to gel. I think they have the pieces to play better. And they will. I think this week, except for going against one player in particular, I think they'll be all right. But it's still kind of it's still a work in progress, and they've got to improve because you know, they've got Wisconsin in a couple of weeks, and Wisconsin's not playing up to their standards, but they have a defense that's still right there, and they can cause a lot of problems. And let me tell you, I wouldn't be shocked if it's 13-9 one way or the other when it's going to matter.
Doc, we've got like 45 seconds left. Sounds like Xander Horvath, who had a terrific game in the lid lifter last year against Iowa, is not going to be able to answer the bell. Is it going to be O'Connell? Is it going to be Plummer? They've kind of switched back and forth. And is there a letdown worry for the Hawkeyes after that big win over Penn State this week, Doc?
I would say no, because they're playing Purdue. If they're playing somebody else, then there might be a letdown factor, but Purdue's won three out of the last four. They beat them last year in the opener and you know, made them feel kind of sick to their stomach. So I don't anticipate them letting down. They also know what they're capable of doing. If David Bell is on one side and George Karloftis is on the other, those are two NFL players. They've got to be cognizant of both. At quarterback, Plummer didn't play against Minnesota in the last game. I don't know who they're going to go with. I don't think they know who they're going to go with. You know, it's going to be kind of a on again, off again there. So, and then Horvath will be out, but King DeRue is a pretty good running back too. But they just don't run the ball very effectively. And Iowa had, I mean, they're a minus four. I think four linebackers in that game last year, which was real pivotal late in the game when Purdue started running the football effectively.
Doc, we're out of time. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate Scott Dockerman. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good to talk to you. We'll come back, finish things up. Miller and Condon, 1460.
State Farm is there.
Do you remember the time that Michael Jordan won the first of his three-peat championships? It's been a while, but the answer is 1993. Do you know when Wolf Roofing started roofing houses? That's right, 1993. Wolf Roofing has been around for a long time. For your next roofing project, put the experience of Wolf Roofing on your side. Find them on the web at wolfroofing.net or give them a call at 515-225-8866. Or online, Wolf.
Call 1-800-BETS-OFF.
The Central Iowa Sports Network is your home for year-round coverage of high school athletics in the CIML and the only place to watch Des Moines Menace Soccer, providing coverage year-round and always streaming for free on YouTube and at CISN.TV. Subscribe to CISN-TV on YouTube to stay up to date on upcoming events. Like and follow on Facebook and Twitter at CISN-TV or visit their website at CISN.TV. CISN-TV, the home for live. Joined by Dr. Ethan Heisman from Elite Eye Care, University Avenue in West Des Moines. I suffer from dry eyes. It's not just eye drops. There's other treatments that are out there.
We have one of the newest treatments available in our office. It's called Intense Pulsed Light, or IPL. It targets the abnormal blood vessels that are the root cause of the inflammation causing dry eye. The side benefit is you don't see those blood vessels anymore.
That's Elite Eye Care, 9250 University Avenue in West Des Moines, and a new location, the Eye Company.
Participating locations.
Trent Condon here for the Urology Center of Iowa. Now's your chance to sit on the couch guilt-free all weekend long watching football while you heal after your vasectomy from the Urology Center of Iowa. The doctors there perform my procedure in less than a half hour. Make the call to 515-400-3550. That's 400-3550 and online at iowauro.com. A guilt-free football watching weekend after your vasectomy from the Urology Center of Iowa.
Get in on the action with the world's largest sports book right at your fingertips. Circa Sports Iowa is where the pros play. Enjoy the highest limits, lowest takeouts, and competitive betting menus. Download, fund, and bet from anywhere in Iowa. Circa Sports Iowa. Sports betting the way it should be. Download your new bookie today. Visit CircaSports.com. Must be over 21 and present in Iowa to bet. Have a gambling problem? Call 1-800-BETS-OFF.
Hi, welcome back, Miller and Condon. Final minute of the program. Mr. Monday Night's playing his music. The Ravens favored by 7. Dog barking in the Colts, or are you playing the fave?
We're playing a total tonight. We got the under of 46. Think this thing's got ugly written all over it. Don't like a side. Give me the under 46.
That'll do it for us here today. Murph and Andy in an hour and 5 minutes. The Fanatics at 3. Iowa State Coaches Show at 6:30. We're Miller and Condon weekdays 10 to noon on 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM. Thanks for being with us. See you tomorrow.